This podcast is supported by ARC, Antenatal Results and Choices. ARC is the only UK nationwide charity offering non-directive, individualised information and support to parents who are making decisions around antenatal screening and diagnostic testing. They also provide specialised bereavement care for those who experience termination for medical reasons. For more information or support, please call ARC on 0207 713 7486.
Hello and welcome to Time to Talk TFMR, Termination for Medical Reasons. I'm Hayley, and this is the start of our fourth series, believe it or not. And for this series, it's just going to be me as host. We want to thank Catherine for being a brilliant co-host, and we're wishing her all the very, very best. So today we're joined by Amy and Rachel. In 2018, Rachel carried and birthed a healthy baby boy for the couple. And in 2020, Amy unfortunately had an early miscarriage and then followed by a TFMR at 18 weeks in 2021. We're really pleased to have them both here. Thank you, Amy and Rachel, for joining us. How are you both doing?
We're good. We've been better, but it's been a tough last sort of 6-7 months, in fact longer, never mind, 7 months last year. Really tough for us both, but we're getting there with the support of one another, aren't we, really? So yeah, it's been tough, but we are starting very slowly to turn a corner.
Yeah. I want to maybe start with the support element. And I remember in your note to me that you felt quite well supported by professionals. Is that right?
Yeah, that's definitely right. I mean, from initially with the miscarriage, we didn't, the miscarriage was early gestation. It was 7 weeks. So we didn't get the support because obviously we didn't seek the medical advice per se at that stage. But with Elliot, our son that we lost at just over 18 weeks, the professional support from the specialist fetal medicine unit was fantastic, wasn't it? Yeah. We could not fault them from the minute we were sort of fast-tracked to them from our local hospital. They completed a CVS on me, made me feel so comfortable to check for chromosomal abnormalities. And from that minute that we first went into that very first appointment until the very last time we spoke to them, which was the follow-up following the termination, they were
so
empathetic. The way they spoke to us, and I think they understood that we weren't necessarily a couple that were after a great deal of empathy in this instance. We wanted hard scientific facts in order to make our decision, and they really respected that, didn't they? And then whilst also remaining empathetic and sympathetic and so on. Yeah, we found them incredibly professional, didn't we? And super, super supportive. Yeah. But particularly as to listen to the podcast and hearing other couples' stories, that necessarily isn't always the case. So I think we feel even more fortunate that it was the case for us. Felt really supported throughout the whole journey from even sort of 9 weeks, really, up until, just before 19 weeks.
Yeah. And obviously pregnancy came about through IVF.
Yes.
So you would have been being checked more regularly, more early because of that fact.
Well, I mean, we obviously were scanned at 7 weeks to, check that it was a viable pregnancy, heartbeat and so on. But we knew pretty early on, I would say about 9.5 weeks? 10 weeks I'd already been to A&E twice.
Okay.
We sort of knew something was amiss.
Yeah, I think we maybe just assumed it was potentially the start of another miscarriage, which is pretty much what they thought as well. Yeah. And that's kind of how the investigation started, because they thought that's what was about to happen. And obviously, having had that before, we just assumed that that's kind of where it was going to take us.
Yeah.
At first.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the thing, isn't it? Nobody expects a diagnosis that is a fetal abnormality, and you may have this decision to make. Nobody expects that.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, it's a shock. Yeah,
it was. We didn't get to the 12-week. You know, let's have a look at your baby stage. We knew before then, didn't we? Because when I'd gone to Annie, I think it was for the second occasion, because I was bleeding, they were like, right, we're going to have to investigate this. Let's make an appointment. And it was then when I was about 10 and a half weeks where they looked at the baby, they found the bleed, oh, there's not a problem there. You know, it's an isolated bleed. There's just a sort of sac outside of, it's got nothing to do with the baby, yada, yada, yada. And then the sonographer just said, you know, and in hindsight, I'd went alone because I was in A&E at 2 a.m. in the morning and Rachel wasn't allowed with me because of COVID. As soon as they found the heartbeat, the relief was phenomenal. And then they said, oh, you know, this will be fine. We'll investigate it. It doesn't look to be anything majorly wrong. We've got a heartbeat. We've got a baby. Brilliant. Come back. And this was, I think, Saturday, 2 a.m. Come back on Monday. And I went by myself because you just got to work, hadn't you? We thought, wow, there's nothing wrong. And then it was about 10 and a half, 11 weeks. And he said, look, you know, it's my professional duty. I think there may be something wrong with your baby, the nuchal translucency measurement. And he obviously then went to explain what that was 5 millimeters. And he then told me a little bit and just went, I'm just going to have to leave you here. I need to go and speak to the women's center. And that's when I rang you in tears, didn't I, to come through and just saying, you know, initially he'd said, you know, it could be Down syndrome, it could be Edwards syndrome, etc. And I just went into a frenzied sort of Google attack and Dr. Google was giving me everything. And then it sort of led from there. And obviously through the fetal medicine unit, Elliot was later diagnosed with a severe brain malformation, meaning that his life expectancy wouldn't be in double figures. He would need operations weekly with shunts in his brain, too much fluid on his brain. He would be very unlikely to walk, feed himself, talk. Just quality of life would be absolutely shocking.
Yeah.
But that's obviously in the much later stage we found that out, sort of after many, many tests, didn't we? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's so sad to hear that. And, you know, and the amount of time that you went from when you found out that there was a potential problem here to your eventual TFMR, that's quite a number of weeks.
Yeah, it was over 50% of the pregnancy, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. By the time you're waiting for the next test
and the results,
mm-hmm. and then, well, that's okay. So now we're going to look at this. So we'll book you in to look at this and then go to the appointment. And it was only really the last appointment where we found out it was an instant, this is it.
Yeah.
There wasn't the wait at that bit where everything else was a test wait. And then that was just an instant, this is the issue.
Mm. And how did you two cope with that period of time?
I didn't cope very well at all. I struggled. I took some time away from work. I did later go back to work after I had a CVS and the chromosomal results came back normal. And this is the problem with it all. I felt a sense of relief, but there was also, this still isn't right. You know, the nuchal measurement is too high. And like I said, Dr. Google was telling me that this is not something that's going to really rectify itself. And after seeking advice from ARC as well, you know, they were so reassuring, but there's still that dread even when you get the good news. And I think I didn't cope very well at all. And then because we're both teachers, we got the news at the very, very end of the summer term. And it was just heartbreaking because I was almost 20 weeks pregnant and had to return back in September with no pregnancy, no baby, no nothing. And I have not coped well at all with it. Yo.
No, I think I'm slightly different. I'm a bit more a different animal altogether. Quite easily box things off and that's this and this is for that. And I think that's where we differ slightly. And I was probably much better because I was able to just box it and leave it. And then when we had to deal with things, then I could open that box. Yeah. And when we didn't have to deal with things, I could pretty much crack on as normal, if you like.
Yeah.
But it was the Dr. Google thing, which I think kind of escalated things out of control in my mind.
Because
you could come up with anything.
Mm. Yeah, and I suffer from chronic anxiety. So everything that I read, I just believed.
Right, okay.
Then even after the termination, I got really severe mastitis and then I had a breast cancer scare and I was like, oh my word, this is just, it's like docked in. And I was like, right, I must make a promise to myself. My New Year's resolution 2022 is whenever I'm feeling ill, just go to the doctors.
Yeah.
Or seek specialist advice. Like I obviously then, you know, was guided towards people like ARC and for example, SANS, but just don't read, because you only pick up on that negativity.
I think we were quite lucky as well. And I don't know if anyone else is, we actually knew somebody and we knew
lucky,
a couple.
Is that lucky?
Not lucky. I don't know how to explain.
Yeah.
We knew a couple who it had happened to.
Okay.
So it was one of my close friends and her wife, and the kind of a similar thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd kind of spoken about it happening because it happened to someone else who we knew.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it would have been different if we'd have never have known those people, because we'd never have realised that this thing goes on. But actually, they were a point of contact.
Oh, they were.
We were like asking questions about it when we didn't maybe want to ask at the hospital, and how even you could ask, you know, even though it was my friend, how do you feel? Like, what do you do? And there was someone else there. And I imagine not many people maybe know that person who's done the same thing.
No, I think that that's quite a rare thing to have somebody in your life already that you know. You might have somebody in your life who has been through this too, but you don't know, because let's face it, people don't really talk about this as much as we should. That's why, partly why the podcast is here. But yeah, I think that's probably more unusual that you've got somebody in your life that you know and that is open about it, that you can go and speak to. And it sounds like that was a really good source of comfort and information and support, hopefully for you both. I'm really sort of interested in, you know, how, you know, Rachel, seeing Amy getting so anxious and the doctor Googling, and how that sort of affected you when you have your way of dealing with it was very much more, right, we're going to deal with it when we have to deal with it, and then we're going to put it away. So how was that for you?
It was really frustrating, and it did cause a bit of contention, and, you know, I was getting angry because I couldn't understand why you couldn't just leave it for the medical profession to sort it out, and they would tell us what we needed to know when we needed to know. And just because this happened to one person, it would happen totally different to some people. So you just kind of needed to wait and be patient, whereas you need those answers pretty quickly
answers.
And straight away. So we're just trying to make up those answers. So I wouldn't say it made us argue, but
no,
I mean, we had to have like words about it. And you know, I was a bit like, well, I'm gonna take your phone. Well, I'll get it. And I was like, right, I'm turning the internet on and I'm taking it with me. And I'm gonna do this. And when I go to work, you're not gonna sit in the house and look at this, and I'll just take everything away and you can't do it. Well, there's 4G. All right, okay.
I wonder, Rachel, did you feel a bit helpless? You know, was it a sort of sense, there's not much I can do here other than we need to go to the appointments and see what the doctors say to us and then make our decisions. And it just sounds like there's a bit of kind of, there's not much we can do. And yeah, it's just that sense of helplessness as the partner, as the non-pregnant person.
Yeah.
What do we do with this?
Yeah, because I like to think that I have the answers a lot of the time, and obviously you don't have the answers. And it was just really difficult to just try and keep us on as positive a mindset going into these appointments as possible, particularly because the time frame in between them as well, and kind of keeping things up and going and trying. Because, you know, it could have had a positive end and we didn't know that. And I didn't want to just catastrophize everything to it always be negative. I'm very much like, well, if you think in a positive way, then it's going to end up positive and all of that jazz.
Whereas now, because I do suffer from anxiety, I thought the worst and the worst has happened.
Mm.
Then I now feel like my brain and my thoughts are even stronger. So I think that's something for the future that I need to work on, because I've almost been proven right and that my catastrophizing has been correct, then I'm going to now have to, and I know it's going to take a long time, but undo all of that.
Yeah.
And it, we saw it in practice, and I had a breast cancer scare in October of this year, and you saw it the best. After Elliot, we had requested subject access request to his all of the notes. I just wanted them. I just felt comfort in having them to...
We have so little of our babies.
Yeah.
You just want everything that's available.
Exactly. And I just wanted to know what they'd written, not because I questioned them. I just want, and I guess it sounds awful, but it sort of forms proof, because yes, I have pictures, and yes, we, you know, went to his funeral and so on. But I think that reading those, I was even reading those too much. And yeah, it's something I need to work on, because it's taught me that sometimes I can write, and that's how I'm thinking. And that's quite scary, because it's not true. I know deep down it's not true. So,
well, we're not that powerful either way. So we're not powerful enough to manifest terrible things happening by thinking about them. And we're also, I hate to say it, Rachel, we're not powerful enough to, it's my belief anyway, that we're not powerful enough to manifest positive things, good things either, that these things, it's the sort of nitty gritty of loss of any kind. But I think this type of loss really exacerbates it, but it's the powerlessness. It's that I am not in control.
Yeah.
It's out of my hands. I think pregnancy shows us that anyway, whether it's a healthy pregnancy or not a healthy pregnancy. But I think being pregnant, I remember being pregnant with my son, my living son, and just kind of being quite amazed how my body was just doing this. I didn't have any say in it. It was just all happening. And that's a really lovely, positive thing. And of course, that can go the other way when things are not going the way that we want them to. Yeah. And this is just happening and I have no control. So I guess that's what I would want to say about kind of anxiety and, you know, the intrusive thinking that can happen. But it's really good to hear your two sides of that coin, really, and how that played out. And I guess that maybe leads on to sort of how, you know, after Elliot was born and, you know, the grief starts before the termination.
Absolutely.
But I wondered if you guys could tell us a little bit about how each of you have grieved for Elliot.
Again, very differently. We're very different in our personalities in regards to this, aren't we? One thing we do share in common is we're both, it sounds ironic given that we're speaking on a podcast, but we are both very private people, very private people. And since the death of Elliot, I've done nothing but talk about Elliot, which I never, ever thought I would do, because not many people knew that I was pregnant, but yet so many more know that I lost a child. And that's been my biggest thing in terms of dealing with grief, to speak as much as possible. And I'm quite external in my feelings, whereas previously and in other things, I'm not. Like I say, I'm a very private person, but I am suffering from PTSD, and my grief is being made worse by certain triggers, which obviously every parent who has a loss is always going to be triggered by. Your natural seeing pregnant women, pregnancy announcements, that's a normal thing. But even slight things, like at work the other day, the cleaner at work was, you know, how was your Christmas? And thinking, oh gosh, that question, you know, that
a loaded question, isn't it, when you're fresh in grief?
And I, you know, yes, it was nice, it was lovely, and all your niceties, and did you spoil your little boy, you know, me and Jasper, our living son? Oh yes, of course. Well, you do when you've only got one. Do you want more? And it's those sort of, like, obviously, bless him, he doesn't know. And that triggers me, and it triggers me. And it just, the wave of grief when you'd least expect it. I was just stood at the sink washing up my mug. And yeah, I guess in terms of, for me, the grief has, like you say, started from, I think really when I had the CVS testing, and I think it's almost like you just know something's not right. But like you say, I'm dealing with it much better now. And I think that's because I'm talking about it. We're talking about it. And I don't understand the stigma associated with terminations. I just don't understand why it's not spoken about. Don't get me wrong, I understand people's religious beliefs and so on and so forth. But even searching for help, and I know we'll possibly touch on that later, but to sort my grief out and how I deal with it, there's just such very little help that's so specific to terminations. Stillbirths, yes. Miscarriages, miscarriages, etc. Yeah. Terminations for medical reasons, no. And I guess that's made me struggle more with my grief, making me feel, now I don't have regret, which is, I think once I've mentioned to you, I've questioned, did we make the right decision? But grief-wise, yeah, that's made me really struggle to cope with my grief.
Yeah.
Really struggle.
I think, unfortunately, with termination, because of its association with abortion, mm-hmm. I think, I don't even know if that's really the right phrase. Unfortunately, because termination's association with abortion, I don't know that that really works for me even as a sentence, because, you know, I'm pro-choice. So I don't have a problem with either of those words. But politically, it means that all sorts of people have an idea when they hear termination, they have an idea of what that means, and they can make a judgment or an assumption based on that. And it just makes it difficult for people to get around it. But I mean, I think unless we talk about it, then it's never going to change.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I'm a big believer in talking about it. It doesn't have to be publicly, like on a podcast, for example, but talking about it with your friends or family or whoever you feel you're able to speak to about it is a good thing. You mentioned about work earlier, Amy. You know, you left pregnant and you turned up not pregnant. Did work know at that stage?
Yeah. So yeah. With it being IVF,
I guess they have to know,
know to give me this sort of the request to attend appointments and so forth. So yes, and then in the period of which I was, you know, given bed rest and so on and had to be off work, they knew, and I kept them to date, and I was really quite honest with them and open with them, and yeah, and then returned on the 1st of September back to it. But your work didn't know, did they? Or not very few, very few.
No. Obviously, I'd had to take certain days to go to appointments or whatever, but they don't necessarily know what happened. I think other than a couple of close friends and like the department who I worked with, because there was an issue because I was constantly going places. I think most people know because they've read Amy's social media posts.
Yes.
And, you know, so I was in a position where I was with a colleague and, you know, we came back after the summer and she said, oh, I'm really sorry to hear about what happened. And I was like, oh my word, how do you even know what happened? And then I was like, oh, she follows you on Instagram, right? Okay, yeah. So I told my close friends who I speak to, and then that was it, pretty much.
Your line manager, bless him, he put himself in a compromising position, hadn't he, bless him, when he'd asked you how I was or how was...
Oh, yeah, on the return, how, because of the previous miscarriage, and then he knew that we were pregnant again, and then he'd asked how she was getting on, and I was like, unfortunately, no, yeah. Not so good, kind of thing. So, you know, he put his foot in it, but because not a lot of people knew, I think because we were apprehensive after the first miscarriage and we hadn't told many people anywhere, and then we knew there was something that kind of made it easier almost because no one knew.
Yeah. Mm.
But then when it was spoken about in a more public forum, then people approached me, even though I necessarily hadn't spoken about it to them or even hadn't even said that Amy was pregnant.
And how did that feel, Rachel, having people sort of... So I have this image of you being sort of ambushed, really, and kind of all of a sudden somebody's talking to you about it and you're not expecting it. You didn't know that they knew.
Trying to give you a hug.
No, I was caught completely off guard. Yeah. thank goodness there was like a bunch of kids in the minibus when she started talking to me about it, or I might have been like, what?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was nice that they acknowledged it, even though, you know, I hadn't said anything about it, but maybe that's just the way I call. If no one knows what's going on, then like no one can worry about it. It can just be left. And if I want to think about it, I can. And if I don't, then I don't have to, because people don't know. So that's fine, kind of thing. So that's where we completely differed, I suppose, in how we've dealt with it. Like, we've got some mementos and stuff which we hold dear. Mm-hmm. You keep yours on all the time. I take mine off, put them on, take mine off and put them on. Mm-hmm. Well, they're very special to me, but I like to just have it at different times, if that makes sense at all.
Yeah, it makes total sense. And you know what? I can't help but ask this question. Do you think it would be any different for you, Rachel, if you were the one carrying the baby, if you were the one who was pregnant?
I think so. I think it would be different. Yeah. Sometimes I think, oh, you know, maybe I wish that had happened to me. And would that have been better for Amy if it had happened to me? But that's kind of a protective thing.
I think, you know, what it has made us realise is we know that we were incredibly fortunate to have a healthy baby via IVF. No matter who gave birth to that child, we have a healthy son who drives us insane at times, but is absolutely adorable. And I think it's made us realise how, whilst we're not seeking IVF because we have fertility issues, like heterosexual couples perhaps are, we still feel incredibly grateful that we have a healthy little boy. Yeah. And I think that more than anything else, it's regardless of who got pregnant, who's delivering the child and so on, we are so grateful, aren't we, to have him.
Even more so. Now.
Even more so.
Yeah. I think that's a saying that we've said throughout the process, like, just don't forget how lucky we are, because, well, our friends certainly were in this position but don't have a child, like who it happened to, so there will be people who don't, but very lucky that we do, so we just need to
not that it's use a, that it's not well. A, at least yeah. at least yeah. it's not that, you know, Elliot is very very much our child, but we are so grateful to have Jasper. We are incredibly grateful, and you know, it just hasn't worked for me personally, being the birth mother, it just hasn't worked out for me yet.
I think it maybe like it helps me understand how, not how Amy felt maybe inadequate, but she felt like she'd failed. Like she talked a lot about that she'd failed, and I obviously hadn't. So I think actually, if it had have been me that this happened to, and my type of personality, that's how I would have felt, that I'd failed to produce. So I think I could kind of empathize with that, thinking, yeah, I would feel like that. But at the same time, trying to like reassure that you can't feel like that, because it's not your fault. It would happen. It does happen to anybody. Like, you can't keep thinking like that. It's not your fault. It just happens for a reason.
It's really interesting, because some of the things that you're describing, I mean, are things that I have felt when I have had miscarriages and my termination, that, you know, I failed, my body failed. I remember apologizing to my husband, you know, after a miscarriage. So it was my first miscarriage. And I was waiting to go in, or maybe it was when I came out and I had just woken up from the anesthetic or something, but and apologizing, just going, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And he's just looking at me going, you have nothing to apologize for. Please, please don't say you're sorry. It's not your fault. And so it's really interesting that, you know, there's these similar feelings and similar reactions. And I think what's really interesting is that in because you're a same-sex marriage, female, and you've been through pregnancy already, Rachel, there's an understanding of what pregnancy is and feels like. And obviously, you know, in my situation, my husband can't know what that feels like. So in my brain, sometimes, you know, when I've gotten angry with him, I'm like, yeah, but you don't know what it's like. Mm-hmm. You know, when we've had our moments of grief, and it sort of blows you apart for a bit, grief, you know, and I could go, well, you don't know what it's like because you can't. But you can't do that, Amy, you know, you can't say that. And it changes the dynamic in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. It does, doesn't it? And, but then at the same time, I mean, the first pregnancy was obviously shorter. The pregnancy with Elliot was much longer, but yours, we always call it, your pregnancy was just a complete breeze. It was the perfect, perfect pregnancy. And obviously the almost 19 weeks that I was pregnant with Elliot from week six, I would say, it really was not a total opposite. And so we've had very different experiences.
It maybe went against her, actually, because yes, I perfect. Was very much like, well, I don't even know what you're whinging about, because yeah. I've done this and it's fine. And
yeah,
you know, so you kept saying, you can't be in that much pain. You can't be. Here I am, sat in A&E. Think of my fee, I'm sat in A&E. Oh. But Rachel's known for being having a hard exterior. And I was like, no, I am in this much pain. We would not be sat in A&E if I was not, trust me.
Yeah. So that actually kind of worked against you in a way, in that situation. Yeah. I can really see that. And that would be really annoying, Amy.
It was in general life, that's how it works. But yes, you can't. And I've got this stabbing pain. And no, it's just, no, it'll just be a little cramp. No, it just really hurts.
I wonder.
A bit far. Yeah, a little bit.
Just want to get it on record, on recording, that it can be played back over and over again. I'm sorry. It is really quite interesting, and I wondered what you sort of alluded to it there, Amy, about, you know, you haven't had a healthy pregnancy yet. You haven't been able to have that healthy baby. And are you yet thinking about next steps, or are you still very much, let's just take our time here?
I think I've been guided by Rachel very much so, in the sense that when this happened, we were, obviously, as you know, it's horrendous. But then I was like, in my head, I was forward planning, going, but how about maybe, you know, we go again in November, we go again. And you were, no, no way. And I'm so glad I listened. But I think we are slowly turning a corner to say, right, let's look at this year. Let's see what it has planned for us. Let's possibly investigate, because we're a same-sex marriage, same-sex couple, you know, we go private. It's not as if it's just, let's go back to the doctors, you know, four rounds, sorry, because we've got a living son. This will be our fourth round of IVF. So not just emotions to take into consideration either, as there's financial implications, which amount to nothing. Let's be honest, when you think realistically, you know, we have a living son, and you would never, ever, ever say, oh gosh, we're not trying again because it's too expensive, or it's this, or it's that.
Well, you know, I think you make a good point there, though, because these are all of the considerations.
Yeah. And
it's truth. It's the truth. These are the considerations.
And we, you know, we make decisions in the best interest of our family. And yes, we are slowly turning a corner, but could we face that heartache again? Now, don't get me wrong, the miscarriage was awful. It was awful. But when you get to the later stages of pregnancy, and when we were, you know, we were going for the anatomy scans, and I say you have to make it, we had to make a decision, you know, with Elliot, but it's not a decision, is it really? People say, well, you've got a choice. It's not. Yeah. And I think to ever be in that situation again really scares me. But obviously the doctors and professionals have assured me it was a structural abnormality. The risk of him having the brain malformation was 1 in 300,000. Poor Elliot was just that one. Those 299,000 other children are living potentially healthy lives. So would it happen again? At the moment, that I think that's where my anxiety creeps in. And I think we've spoken about us, if we were a heterosexual couple and so on. You've mentioned that, haven't you, in terms of...
Yeah, like... I don't know, like Amy went quite quickly, like, oh, let's try again. And, you know, we had the means to try again. We've got other embryos there and all of that. And I think I was the driver in saying no, because we're not fixed. Like, you're not fixed. You're mentally not in the right place. But it was for that fear of, well, if this happens again, like, I don't think we could do it in such a short time frame as well, because all that was fitted into 2021, essentially, the miscarriage and the treatment again. And then, you know, Elliot, I was just like, no, we can't go again in October, November, because we could end up with a third occasion in 1 year. And I just didn't think that we could actually...
You need a break. You need to grieve.
Yeah.
You need to grieve. Yeah.
And you said if we were a heterosexual couple,
you know, some people might have given in.
They might have, but I think there's a desire for, because there's that physical ability to be able to both, whilst the, you know, the donor sperm would be sibling sperm for Jasper, that we have the ability to each give birth to a child. And I think, yeah, you're right. You know, maybe because it was so hard hitting, if we were a heterosexual couple, we may not feel that. Like, I think it's more comes from me, the desire to almost fulfill my needs, is it, for want of a better word, to birth a child, to have a full 40-week, you know, full-term pregnancy.
Like, if I was a husband and I'd seen what Amy had gone through, I would be like, it's okay, we don't need to do it again.
Yeah.
I don't think we should do it again.
You know, we've got a living child.
However, because... You know, and when we first had Jasper, we had this discussion of who would carry Jasper and how we would go about it. And it was always an agreement that if I go first, then yes, you can have your turn. And I made that agreement. So I can't go back on that agreement. And Amy has that desire. But if we were in a different situation and we were a man and a woman, I think I would be saying, no, that's enough. Like, we are lucky. We have Jasper. I don't think we should keep putting ourselves through this, but I can't take that away from him because I've been lucky enough to do it. So I think Amy should have the opportunity to do it as well.
Yes, this is this unique situation. Well, it's not unique, but you know, the situation of the fact that your relationship is a same-sex couple and you can both be carriers of a pregnancy. You can each have your turn. In a heterosexual relationship, that's not the case. Clearly, you know what I kept thinking about before I met with you guys? It's going to really show my age. I meant to look up this film, but do you remember the film? You might not, but it was with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito. And I think it was called Twins. I think the first one was just called Twins. And they were brothers born in, you know, IVF, and they looked nothing like each other, obviously. But the second one, the second film, Twins 2, was they carry the babies. They carry the babies for their wives. And I just was thinking about that. And this, because I was thinking about you too, and like, you both have this chance to be pregnant and carry babies and go through the process of all of this, whether it's miscarriage, whether it's TFMR, whether it's a healthy pregnancy, like, you both can experience this. And I thought, men can't do that. And then I went, oh yeah, remember that film? Anyway, that's a little digression. that's a slight weird digression. But I get your point, Rachel, about, you know, as the man might go, no. I think, about my own relationship, Charlie has been, we have been at different points on that track at different times. What's been difficult has been for both of us to be on the same point or enough at the same point as each other. That's what's been really hard, is that, you know, one of us might be going, I'm really like gung-ho, and the other one going, oh, I'm a bit scared. You know, that's been the difficult point for us in our relationship, in our family. And now, as we are at our family, we've decided to stop trying for more children. And that's been a very difficult decision. And I think it was more me. Again, this is this on this track thing, you know, where we're at these different points. But I sort of was like, I just don't think I can face another loss and what that would do to our relationship. I was really, suddenly I kind of really focused on our marriage and sort of went, you know, we've made it through so much. We have been through so much together, and we're still here, and we're stronger than ever. So yes, there's that, but there's risk in all of this. And going back to that point of actually not having any control on how it would play out, I don't know that I want to risk my marriage, my family as it is. So that kind of became our decision-making point. And going to the point of having, you know, a living child and feeling so grateful for, you know, we just feel so grateful to have Benjamin. It doesn't, being grateful to have him and to love him and to be his parents doesn't minimize the grief that we feel for Luna. But, you know, I've taken to calling Benjamin rather than my only child. So again, going back to your point of people asking awkward questions like, oh, do you want any more children and all this sort of thing? Mm-hmm. You know, I've started to call Benjamin my everything child instead of an only child, because I think that that's what he encompasses, you know, and I think your everything child or everything children, you know, they can become multiple. That's fine. But I think it just helps to know that they are enough, you know, so whatever happens on your journey.
Yeah, I think it's changed. It's certainly changed me as a parent, as well as a person. I mean, as a person, it's developed a whole new level of empathy that I never thought I had ever. But as a parent, it's changed me. It's made me, obviously you've mentioned, more grateful, but I guess really I've now sacrificed some of my social life and things that I like to do. This hopefully will only be short term, but I just feel like I want to spend every single minute with Jasper because life is so precious. Mm-hmm. I've got to find a, you know, fine line of me time, which I've compromised, but every minute that I just want to do everything with them, and it's changed me massively. Whereas previous, you know, we need time as a couple. We always do that. We're limited on babysitters, to be fair. But and I think he's become more spoiled because of that, which sometimes doesn't work in our favour with tantrums and so on. But it has certainly changed me as a parent. I could say me, and I don't know about you, but
yeah. But yeah. Jasper himself has just—he's been really good.
Oh, he's been adorable.
And like some of the things he says or does, it's just he's so cute.
Yeah, he breaks my heart sometimes. He'll
point to a star in the sky and he'll say, "There's Baby Elliot," and
yeah,
like he lets balloons away, and it's just really cute.
He's just adorable. And he'll say, like, sometimes I'll cuddle him to sleep and I'll go, good night, I love you, I love you." And he'll go, "Good night, Baby Elliot," and I'll just tears will just roll down my face as I'm cuddling him in bed, because I just think, as long as he knows, he will always be a big brother, always. Yeah. That needs to happen, because he knew that. He always used to say, "Mommy's poorly, mommy's got a poorly tummy, mommy's got a poorly tummy," and he knew it was a baby. And then when we found out that it was a baby boy, we were saying it's a baby boy, and all of, and you know, for him it was going to be a normal pregnancy. He was going to have a little brother, and whilst he's only three, he knew exactly what was going on. And then the day that we obviously, I had a surgical termination. So the day that we went into hospital and came home to pick him up, and he was just giving me, and I just think he knew. And he was, and then a few weeks later, I was back out in the garden playing football with him, whereas previously I just had no energy. I was drained. And he was like, "Yay, mommy's all better." And I thought, he's realised I'm back for him. And I think that's why maybe I'm overcompensating now, to be fair. But he knows about Elliot. He always will know about Elliot. He knows at Christmas, Elliot brought him gifts.
Yeah, they love that. You're never going to be able to stop doing that, by the way.
And it's just, he's just been so lovely. But the day after Elliot's funeral, he went into nursery school and we hadn't told his nursery school. And then we'd said, "I think we need to tell him because he's asking lots of questions. We need to tell him." You had emailed his teacher and said, "Look, you know, my wife was almost 20 weeks pregnant. She's lost, unfortunately, lost our child, just in case Jasper is talking." And what a response was something.
He sat in circle time this morning and said that he let a balloon go for Baby Elliot, and that they'd pieced together when my eventually got there.
Who Baby Elliot was.
What it was. So I think they'd gone back to talk to him, but he'd actually gone
and
age
told
three
everyone
and spoken about it. So.
They are so proud of their baby brothers and sisters. Yeah. That's my experience with Benjamin. He is so proud of Luna. Mm-hmm. He will tell anybody about her. He's not afraid.
Yeah.
to do that.
Mm-hmm. And I think we need to keep that up as well, don't we, as he gets older.
Yeah. And it'll change as he gets older. The questions and things will change.
But that for me has been one of the hardest things. One of the things where I've had to choke back tears or just walk out the room and just been floored, absolutely just cry my eyes out. It's been tough when he's asked questions and he said just really cute things, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, they're good teachers, I think, when it comes to grief and to learning how to live with loss. I think small children, they can teach us a lot about that.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have been fantastic. I'm really just so pleased to have had you both on. And thank you for being so open as well. There's one thing that we do at the end of all of our episodes, and this is, we call them the TFMR takeaways. And so the question is, what advice or piece of hope would you give to women or families who are either facing TFMR or who have undergone a TFMR? Amy, would you like to go first?
I'd say particularly for the person who's pregnant rather than the partner, mm-hmm. I would say be proactive. And what I mean by that is be proactive in looking after yourself, because like I said earlier, I found that the perhaps a specialist support isn't there. So I bought jewellery with Elliot's name on before I came out of hospital. When I came home, it was there waiting for me. Books, self-help books. I did like ARC's steps in September to focus on something, because you have to look after yourself and you can sit with your grief, and I sit with my grief often, but there has to be a point where you think, do something for yourself, because there is very little out there. And that, I think this is where your podcast in particular has just been. And I know it sounds really cringe and really quite over the top. It was a lifesaver because it made me feel my feelings normalized, and you know, this is normal. You're not the only one. And I think that, yeah, my advice, pre-plan, look after yourself when this is all over as such.
Yeah. And Rachel?
I think mine's like a pretty similar theme, just that you've just got to, I'll say think positive because I like to do that, but you've just got to think about yourself and your situation and forget about the outside world and do what's important to you and what's best for you, and just don't think about what other people's viewpoints are on any of it, because that isn't what's important and that isn't what's going to get you through it. You need to really look at what the best thing for you is and to maintain that moving forwards as well.
Yeah, it's great. Thank you, both of you. Great to have you on, as I said. And I am sending you all those sorts of good thoughts and lots of love for the next steps.
Mm-hmm.
And keep us posted.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you've enjoyed it. Let us know over on social media, Facebook and Instagram at Time to Talk TFMR. And Twitter at TalkTFMR. Coming up this season, we'll also be talking about maternal health reasons, research, and third trimester TFMR, and much more. Don't forget, you can also subscribe to our podcast from Podbean, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. Subscribing means you can get all of our new episodes as soon as they're released. That's all for this time. Thank you so much, and please take gentle care of yourselves.